Hi everyone, I'm Adam Johnson. I'm a dad and a rare disease patient advocate, a self-proclaimed dadvocate. From the onset of symptoms and even after an eventual diagnosis, the isolation was almost as excruciating as the symptoms themselves. I felt so alone in so many ways. One of the most prominent ways in particular was as a parent. I knew I couldn't be the only person with a rare disease who was also trying to raise children, but it sure felt like I was. As I've learned, when there's not a specific community you're looking for, one that you need, sometimes you just have to make it yourself. It's taken a while, but I finally decided to do just that. And here we are. This is Parents is Rare, a series brought to you by Energy in Action. Living life as a parent with a rare disease can be quite paradoxical. We laugh and cry, we're vulnerable and scared, we're brave and afraid, all at the same time. Parents is Rare is a community where parents like me who have a rare disease or chronic illness can connect, share, support, and be supported. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Parents is Rare series of the Energy in Action podcast. I'm your host, Adam Johnson. Today's guest is Lisa Weinberger. Lisa is a wife, mother, and a digital marketing professor. She's an educator and business owner with over 20 years of experience designing and leading corporate marketing training programs. We connected on social media and have a lot in common, from background in the field of education to teaching college courses and training higher education professionals to trying to figure out how to parent while living in the world of rare disease and chronic illness. In this episode, we discuss a little bit of all those aspects and more. I hope you enjoy this conversation with the wonderful Lisa Weinberger. Hi, Lisa. How are you?
Good. How are you, Adam?
Doing well. Thanks for taking some time to join me today. I really appreciate it.
Sure. Anytime.
Well, I appreciate you taking some time to join and talk with me today. I'm always, it's this weird dynamic, Lisa, where I'm excited to meet other people that I can really relate to. And it's also this like heartbreaking moment as well, right? Where you realize that someone else is going what you're going through. But thank you for joining and sharing some of your thoughts and your experiences, and I'm sure it'll be wonderful for everybody. So let's just jump in, and I'd love you to maybe start out by just sharing a little bit about yourself, Lisa.
Yeah, sure. My background is in education and marketing. I went to school to be a elementary, middle school English teacher, and I ended up teaching college English once I got my master's degree. It all happened by accident. I ended up teaching college and I ended up staying teaching college. I got sick at 18, but now I was like mid 20s and I was having flares and I didn't, this was in the late 90s. No one really discussed autoimmune diseases. And so I started not feeling well. And so I researched how to do some freelance writing. It was right. The internet was already going, but it wasn't like we have today where you could learn and find freelance jobs. So I did a lot of researching on how to do that. So I ended up getting into marketing. So I'm an SEO marketer. I teach writing or advanced technical writing courses, and I'm also teaching digital marketing courses, and I'm also an SEO marketer. So I'm like an SEO manager for one of the universities I teach with. And so I have an interesting balance. I tend to do a lot more than I probably should, but that's just how my brain works. And I didn't want to give up teaching, and I only teach part-time, and then I work a full-time position. I first got sick with Epstein-Barr in 1994. And it attacked my liver and I had jaundice. But again, it was 1994. So a lot of the doctors were kind of like, you're full of BS. And that is, what was told. And my lab showed I was sick, but they didn't really have a real explanation. And all I really had to do was sleep it off and take some grapeseed oil and try to get my body back. It took about 3 years. And celiac wasn't a thing, though. My husband's cousin was like, you should check, because she's a doctor and she's like, she's very into all that stuff. So she was like, I think you should check and see if you have a wheat or gluten problem. So when I went into the second flare that I didn't know what was going on, my husband found me on our basement floor. He came home from work and I couldn't get up. And our dog back then was staring down, looking at me like, what's going on with you? And my nerves just like gave out. So all these things were going on. I went to the doctor. They said I was depressed. They said, oh, you're depressed. We're going to give you antidepressants. I wasn't mentally depressed. My body was like, no, I'm attacking you. So it's been going on for almost 30 years. So through that, it was, Epstein-Barr, which now we know is EBV and it can attack the B cells and it could make worse things happen. So we moved from New Jersey to Arizona and the weather change was so great. I was on the gluten-free diet. I was celiac, you know, I was following the celiac disease diet. I didn't get officially diagnosed because when I tried to eat, I got sick and we said, forget it. We're just going to follow this and that's the end of it. So the drier weather definitely made me feel a lot better. And then we were there for 3 years and then we moved to Florida where it's humid land. Not ideal. The doctors in Arizona, when I was keeping up with all my autoimmune stuff, said, you're probably going to go into another flare, if not more. And I just was like, no, I feel great. What are you talking about? So now 13 years later, we're in Florida and I've gone through multiple flares. And then as how we got brought together is I was diagnosed with a rare disease called pemphigus vulgaris in 2018.
I noticed that on your blog, you talk about that as the Harry Potter disease, right? Like it could be from the Harry Potter movies. I think I got a good chuckle out of that. I think you're right.
Yeah. Well, cause it sounds like pemphigus vulgaris, like with the wand and everything.
Yes, yes. I like that. You got to have a little bit of a sense of humor throughout all of this, right? To try to keep some semblance of sanity going. At least I do. I know for sure. But yeah, about 30 years worth of trials and tribulations and navigating through all of these, you know, terrible, terrible things from the autoimmune diseases to the rare disease. I mean, that's a lot. That's a lot, Lisa, and it's a lot to carry for a long amount of time.
Absolutely.
So when you're going through the diagnostic odyssey, Lisa, and you're trying to kind of figure out, you know, what's going on, one of the things that bothered me the most, that was the most challenging for me, was when I went out of state and found some specialists and spent the time and the money and the effort and the energy to get there. And I sat down and they looked me in the eye and told me what you were told as well, that, hey, it's all in your head. Figure it out, move on, get over it. What kind of implications did that have for you on your journey?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. When I was told that, I have a lot of Jersey in me, so I kind of threw some curses at the doctor because I was angry. My husband looked at them and was like, I had to pick her off the ground and get her into the shower. What are you talking about? Something is not right. So the first thing, I did try an antidepressant. It made me cry, like I couldn't control the crying because I'm like, I don't feel depressed. So I have this attitude. I don't know if it's good or bad, but I have this attitude of like, screw you. I'm going to figure this out on my own. And so that's kind of what we did. We changed my diet. I went to a more natural doctor who ran different type of blood work to see what was going on with inflammation markers. You know, so I sought out a doctor that understood what our bodies are going through. I did a lot of, they gave me a lot of vitamins and supplements that were working for a while, but then my body just was like throwing it up physically. Like it was like, no, too much. So I kind of went, I just ignored what the doctor said and went a different route. And then when we got out to Arizona, which had more of a open mind to what was going on, that's when I finally like felt like, okay, I do have this. All right, great. So now what do I need to do? So, you know, part of it we figured out was the diet, part of it was the weather, and part of it was I had to slow down. So I was able to, you know, I worked for myself for many years. So I was able to maybe only work 3 days a week and then take 5 days to rest or whatever, do whatever I needed to do. I didn't slow down as much as I should have, hence why I got sick here. But I just, you know, it's upsetting, but I don't try to let it bother me because you just have to try to find an answer or try to find something that's going to make you feel good. And also understand that our bodies are attacking something.
It's so variable and it's so challenging to not know that, right? Like, give me a timeline. What are that? My doctors would talk about like with my disease, they're like, yeah, sometimes you're going to have some ups and sometimes you're going to have some downs. I'm like, can you sign me up for some of those ups, right? Like, I'd love to get some of those coming my way here. it's not been like that for a while. And it's so unpredictable, so challenging. And through your journey, Lisa, that, you know, I was kind of reading through some of your blogs, which are fantastic, and we'll make sure to get your website put in the show notes there so folks can come and find you and read about, you know, some of your different experiences. But one of the things that I really pulled from your writings was to, and you just described it right to me, is to be your own advocate, listen to your body, take control of your health, ask questions. And those are so important to, those points are so important. You've got to do that.
Yeah.
And it can be challenging. It can be difficult for me, you know, especially advocating for myself. I was always kind of the mindset, especially growing up and even at the start of my symptoms, Well, the doctor's the expert, right? They know what they're talking about. I have no idea. So I would just go into them and what they would say would go. And when I went into them and they're like, it's all in your head, get over it. Hey, we can't find anything. I'm like, well, now what? Now what? This is horrible.
I mean, even my rare disease doctors don't go through this disease. So, you know, thank goodness I found two really good ones here that I can communicate with and I can send an email to and they'll respond. But the reality is they're like, we don't know what you're going through because we don't have the disease and we're going off of you and the other patients that have this disease. And, you know, I found that out, unfortunately, early on, that when a doctor starts shoving me off, or gaslighting, I guess is what we're using the term now, I was like, all right, well, I'll go figure this out then, whether it's with a functional med doctor or myself, or, you know, now thank good and bad we have the internet, because in the 90s we didn't have it like this, so it was very hard to find. And then I probably contributed to a lot of junk that went into Google back then, but but now that everything's cleaned up and we have real journals that are online for us to read, it's made a difference. And like you said, like on the blog I wrote, like my first Rituxan infusion, the oncologist was like, oh, I can't do it because it's not covered by insurance for pemphigus. And I said, oh, no, it is. It was passed 2 months ago. Go to the site now. Otherwise, I'm walking out of your office. And he went and he came back and he apologized and he showed me the paper. I said, yes, I know the paper. That's why I said go read it. And it's hard, though, because I couldn't, like I wrote, I didn't speak for like 4.5 months or so because I was all blistered and all the blisters were open and I was like burns my throat. So my husband was, you know, not at that point I was able to speak, but prior to that, trying to get the diagnosis for a year, it was horrible.
So when you were in that space, Lisa, when you were trying to get the diagnosis and you're starting to think about, you know, getting closer to this actual physical thing, like tell me what's going on. You know, not only do you have that going on, but you also had some other concerns that hit your family. You're starting to get ready to think about, hey, what's going on here? How do I communicate with my daughter? Tell her what's going on. You know, kids are so intuitive. They know something's not right, or they can sense when things are going on. Your daughter was about the same age as mine when I went through this, but you want to expand on that a little bit? Tell us what was going on in your family then at that point, if you don't mind.
Yes, I was 2018. So I guess she was around 8, 9 years old. I usually, you know, tend to not share too much with her or even my parents and in-laws who live down the road from us. Most of my autoimmune disease never showed physical symptoms. So it wasn't, you know, she knows mommy gets tired, you know, I have back issues. She was always seen mommy like, you know, either hunched over or mommy's tired. Okay. But what happened was when the blisters started coming out, it was all inside my mouth, my throat. Okay. Then when they started coming out of my lips, I was like, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? Like, how do I hide this? So actually I was able to keep it going for the most part and hide it. And so I was about to get my diagnosis, or I just got my diagnosis. And then my husband had a heart attack. And so like, she saw that, you know, he didn't like fall to the ground or anything. She just had to go with me to drive him to the hospital. And he's like, I have a pinched nerve. Drive me to the hospital. I'm like, oh, okay, if you think that's what it is. So she saw that. So that kind of ended up staying in her mind a lot more than what I was going through. And then once I was able to, once the blisters released on my lips and my face cleared up, I was able to speak to her about it. And she's very intelligent. So I said, you know, mommy has autoimmune diseases. This one, this time, kind of came out as a physical symptom. You know, I get tired. And so now I'm on medicine and it's being controlled and we're trying to get better. And daddy's fine. Daddy actually recovered really, really, really well. So daddy's fine. He's not going anywhere. But if anything, his thing, you know, because you hear heart attack or diabetes, like they hear that. So they know that seemed to stay with her more than mine. And then as she started getting older and I was able to explain to her, you know, what it is and what autoimmune disease is. And of course she has, you know, the internet. She's like, oh, so your body's attacking itself. I said, right. So that's what's going on with me. I said, and some days I'm great. And some weeks I'm wonderful. And other times, if you see me laying down, it's not because I'm ignoring you. It's because I need a 30-minute nap or I need a 3-hour nap. But yeah, I mean, it was unfortunate that he went through what he went through, but it almost took the attention off of whatever I was dealing with because you know, it's kind of more known in the world what a heart attack is versus what pemphigus vulgaris.
Sure. Yeah. We're all a little more familiar with that, right? Yeah. I guess that's what makes some of these different conditions, the chronic illnesses or the rare diseases, rare, right? Like part of it's not necessarily that there's only a certain number of people. I know that is the case for yours, but also just nobody talks about it. Nobody sees it. It's not as prevalent as we found. And I'm certainly glad that your husband's doing better now and is okay. That's got to be a lot though for the 8-year-old. Like that's how it was for me. My daughter was 8, my son was 3, and they're doing that same thing, Lisa, that you just described there. I see almost a mirror image of my experience where they're like, used to be active, used to get after it and do things all the time, go, 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 and play with us and run with us and do all these things. And now you're not. You used to travel for work all the time. You used to do all these things. And now you're just going to all these appointments and you're not home as much, but it's because you're at the doctor and not at, you know, out teaching teachers or whatever, you know. It's just so much.
Right. You know, you feel bad, but we're trying to do our best to parent them the way, you know, our bodies and our health has given us.
Yeah. It's the thing that weighs the heaviest on me, I think. I mean, there's, you know, there's variability there, right, Lisa? Like there's, you know, there's different days where I'm struggling with other things, but that is one of the hardest hit points that I've kind of struggled with. I grapple with it all the time, is how is this whole journey that I'm going through impacting my kids? I mentioned to you and I've mentioned to others that when I first was diagnosed with my rare disease, I felt like the only person in the world going through this, right? First of all, it's a rare disease. And second, I'm fairly young, right? I was 35 at the time when my symptoms popped up, and none of the other dads that I see are going through this. I don't, you know, where are the other parents that are going through these types of situations? And that's part of the reason why I'm here having discussions and conversations with folks like you who are, you know, willing to help fill the void for me in a way, and hopefully for others as well, to let them know they're not alone, because it's one of the loneliest journeys that I've been on.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I had physical symptoms all over my scalp back from when we lived in Jersey. And because I have bad allergies, everything was, oh, you have bad allergies. But about 2 years before everything else popped out and I, you know, didn't know what was going on, I had a bad breakout on my scalp to a point my husband's like, why are you scratching so bad? Why is your scalp so open? And it was that. But again, when I did go to the doctors, oh, it's your allergies, stop scratching. Oh, you have dandruff. Oh, you know, it was everything was shoved off, because why would you go further? I mean, I live in an area that's very populated with doctors and elderly. So they see me walk in, I think that's true. And they're like, uh-huh. And why are you here?
Right. Right. I've gotten that at both ends of the spectrum, Lisa, where it's really interesting where I go, like a lot of the mitochondrial disease doctors work with children. And so some of the folks that I see, from a geneticist to my neuro-ophthalmologist that I go see, work with kids. So it's me sitting in a room with other, you know, 5 and 8-year-olds waiting for my appointment. And then on the flip side of that, I go to physical therapy and it's me and all the, you know, 70 and 80-year-old people that are in there. And I'm just kind of right in the middle, and they're like, oh yeah, wait, what are you here for? You know, I'm going to the kid clinic. They're like, where's your son or daughter? I'm going to the other one. Like, oh, you're here to pick up your, you know, your dad or your mom. I'm like, no, here for me.
Yeah. No, it's not easy.
So Lisa, I'm curious a little bit about when you kind of hit those rough stretches, those rough patches. You know, you mentioned the time where you couldn't speak for 4.5 months. You get times when you can't, you know, pick up your child. Those are some really challenging, difficult things. How do you get through those rough days?
So I guess I just know, I don't know. I guess I just have this glimmer of hope that I know that I've been in similar situations, whether it was my first sickness when I slept for 4 months and came out of it okay, not okay, but came out of it better. And then I was back up and walking around. And like you said, I used to travel for work a lot and work in an office and kind of feel like, hey, I'm normal for for this year. That has a lot to do with it. I just have this fighting brain that just wants to try to keep going. I mean, listen, I have days where, like last week, I tweeted about it, which I never do. It's like very rare that I ever share. But, you know, where I'm like, why am I in pain? Why is this happening? I've been, knock on wood, feeling great for like 6 months, give or take. You know, you have your sleepy days and your pain, but it went on for like a week. And I'm like, did the weather change again? Did I eat something? You go through all that in your head. And, you know, and so mentally, it's just trying to know that it will get better. It's not going to become the best. You're not going to feel like you're 16. I mean, but you're going to be able to do something. Also, like we're planning a fairly large trip in the summer, and I'm a little nervous about doing it, but we have to do it because like we wanting to travel for, you know, since obviously before COVID. So we're going to do it and we're going to take our daughter and we're going to go experience things because it, you know, and my husband knows, she knows, like, I mean, I'll keep pushing myself. That's the other problem is I over push myself because that's just my mental state. But I said, I know we have to take rest days or rest hours. And kind of once I get back to feeling like I can walk normal or walk from here to there without hurting, just knowing I have to pace myself. And I always overdo it because that's because you feel good and you're like, I feel great. I got to get this, and this done because 2 weeks from now, I'm going to be back on the couch with a laptop on my lap trying to get my work done.
Oh my gosh, that communicates so much to me. I know when you get those little bursts, whether it's like for 5 minutes or for 5 days, if you're lucky or whatever, you're like, come on, let's go. Let's do it. I want to get after it right now. Right. Yeah. And I sense too, Lisa, a little bit and talking with you and reading up a little competitive nature that you've got going on maybe. Right. Right.
Yes. Yes.
So yeah, I'm the same way where it's like, what are you, when I go to PT or something, especially some of the early times. And one time when I went to physical therapy session in the water, right. I'm in the pool. I'm like, oh my gosh, this feels amazing. My joints don't hurt. My muscles are great. I can do that. They're like, you know, do 10 reps. I'm like 10, I can do 15. Like, watch this, you know? And then I couldn't get out of the pool. Right. It was like my legs start to not work when you leave that safe ground of being in the water, you know? And it's like, oh my gosh.
Well, that's what I learned with my trainer. Cause she, you know, she saw me when I would like, she's like, oh, do a set, do. And then I'll say, no, I'm going to do another set. Right. This was years ago. And now she has me at 45 and I'm like, I could barely get off the bench. I mean, on Wednesday I went to her and I said, I'm in pain, but I know, but it's, I'm not, cause she was first like, are you sick? I said, no, it's the nerves overreacting. And we did a really, like really light, like 3 pound, really light workout. And by Wednesday night, Thursday, everything, and not just here, but everything, my skin was hurting. And so I canceled on Friday because I said, I'm just inflamed. And I, you know, between her and going to the chiropractor and I go to an acupuncturist, you know, so they all like, yeah, you're inflamed. So she's like, then don't train. It's not, you know, I'll see you next week, you know, but I used to like keep pushing. So that at least as I'm getting older and learning, okay, can't do it. Just don't do it. Because if you do it, you're going to be out for another week. And, but yeah, no, there's definitely a competitive nature. I've calmed down a lot, but that was the hardest thing was the training was I had to be like, nope, this is all I can do today. And she can tell because she's known me for, oh my gosh, 10 years now.
Yeah. And for me with my condition, Lisa, the doctor, one of the key phrases that always sticks out in my mind, he says up to, but not beyond fatigue. And I'm like, but that's when you're supposed to really push. That's when you're supposed to really get through it. But not for me. When for my disease, like to your point, what you've been sharing about, it's like, once you do that, you're just setting yourself back even more than what you would have been before. And it's hard, but we got to learn how to kind of recalibrate in some of these areas. Yeah.
Oh yeah. I mean, I always say to her that like growing up as an athlete, that's what they teach you. And even ways of taking care of your body and your tissue and the fascia, all those things we never learned. We never learned any of that. I'm like, you know how much injury I wouldn't have today if we weren't pushed the way we were back then? And she's like, yeah. She's like, and that's why I'm here. I said, no, I know it's why. She's an ex-bodybuilder. So I'm like, no, I understand. But it's amazing because they train you with your, you know, mentality of like, do, go, go, just ice yourself, just heat, just wrap, you're fine, go.
Well, with the balance that you're kind of talking about, Lisa, and how you have to kind of try to pace yourself a little bit, and that can be challenging. And by the way, when you're talking about your trip that you're going on and doing those different things, that was also one of the most challenging aspects for me, was breaking things out, taking time to rest. I have to do it every day. There's a component to my disease that's taking a toll on my respiratory muscles. So, you know, I have to stop and hop on my ventilator and give my respiratory muscles a chance to breathe and rest in a way that doesn't make my body do all the work. And there's sometimes where I'm just kind of like that same feeling you expressed, like, how did this happen? How did I get here? Right? Like the why me pops into my head sometimes, as much as I try not to go down that road. It's there. It's a real thought. It's a real feeling. And I have to acknowledge it on some level while not getting overwhelmed by it. I appreciate you sharing some of those things. They resonate deeply with me.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah. It happens at least once a month. Yes, I'm like, again, why?
Right. Come on. I know. Along those lines of activities and adjusting things, can you share a little bit about how you might have or do adjust things with your daughter in terms of activities or how you either do things now or how you've done things in the past? That's one thing I'm always curious about from other folks in the chronic illness or rare disease community. Like, how do we adjust and do our best with the circumstances that we're in, especially if we know what it was like a before to an after type situation as it was for me? How do you keep up with different activities with your kiddo?
Well, so my husband did a lot. Like when she was younger, he would go to like the birthday parties. He was very involved, which he wanted to be involved. I mean, so it's great. And I have a partner that is like that. And then like after school activities, I mean, a lot of it was just driving. I didn't really overdo too much. I mean, I would go, we have a pool. We live in Florida. So she's a swimmer. So I would go swimming for us is actually pretty good, or even just sitting in the pool. But she was very hyper. Now she's calming down. But she was very hyper and has a lot of energy. So we would play in the pool and like, I love to swim and she would want to race. And then, you know, I'd race and then 5 minutes later I'm spasming. So, you know, we kind of had to take the time. We would go to the beach a lot and, you know, she would run around the beach and I could sit on the beach and watch her. And she, again, a very strong swimmer. So, you know, she knew she wasn't allowed to go out to a certain point. So we just kind of did activities. I tend to have my good hours are like 7 a.m. to like noon. So I would get up early. She used to get up early. Now she's a teenager, but she used to get up early. We would go to the park. There's a few small parks around. We would go to me and her would go to the park. I would just go on the time that I could go with her so I could spend the time with her. But a lot of it was that, you know, my husband was able to drop her off at preschool and I would pick her up or vice versa. You know, we just had to work as a partnership. We didn't have help except for him and I. Now we have both parents. Both our parents live down the road from us. So now they can help, but she's older. So it's honestly a bit easier. You know, she has her own issues. She's ADHD. So that, if anything, was the hardest part. I didn't have the pemphigus flare yet, but it was leading up. It was a few years before that, which was full of stress of trying to figure out what was wrong with her because we wanted to help her and make her feel good and have her, you know, be leveled. And, you know, she's very smart. So we had to, you know, find ways because she would get frustrated really easily to find her words because her brain was going. But yeah, I mean, that's really how we did it. We just worked together. And if there was times I just was so exhausted, my husband would just say, I got it.
Lisa, I'm curious then, you know, with all those different changes that you had and kind of the ups and the downs and, you know, the flares that are happening, and you got to have that kind of mode of flexibility built in there, right? Because we just don't know what things are going to look like sometimes, you know, week to week, month to month, even day to day, hour to hour, minute to minute, right? How did that impact your relationships, like from a friend's standpoint or even the family standpoint? How was that for you and those around you?
That sucked. So a lot of friends that we did make when we first moved here, they ended up all moving out of Florida, which we understand why now, but there's that. But some of the friends that I've had for, you know, 30 years knew I always had something going on, but until I got really, really sick, then it like clicked. So some maybe where we were drifting apart, and then I ended up with this illness that nobody could know. I was getting like text messages and phone calls of like, hey, we think it's this. Hey, we think it's that, because something they knew was totally off. I mean, they knew I knew I had autoimmune problems, but it never physically showed a sign where I couldn't get on the phone and talk to them, you know, because I was too much pain. Family wise, they were supportive. I mean, they're always supportive. They're just, I don't share a lot. I probably share more when I do advocacy than I share with my own family. I mean, my husband knows everything, but as far as like my parents who have their own issues and my sisters, like I'm the oldest of three girls. So I was kind of always the one who took to take care of things. So I really didn't share. Like I happened to go up to New Jersey for a family party. And on the way back, I got this bad cold. And after that, everything exploded. Like the pemphigus just went crazy. And so my sister was concerned that, oh my gosh, you picked something up in Jersey. Don't come to Jersey. I said, it's not that. It was starting a year before. I was having little flares, but we thought they were canker sores. So if anything, it made myself and sisters closer. And my parents are my parents. You know, they've always had health issues, whether they were really, I think my autoimmune stuff comes from my parents, even though they don't think it has, but it had to come from someplace. So it's sometimes hard to, you know, talk with them because right away they want to give you an answer and it's not an easy answer. But when my doctor said you need to go on Rituxan or you're not going to get better, my dad actually stepped up, who I was very shocked, and said, Lisa, I did the research. I know it's a cancer treatment. You don't have a choice. And I was like, okay. And that was a big deal because for him, to, you know, he also tried to find alternative ways to solve things. And he looked it up. And you know, once we got my diagnosis, and he's like, you have to. Like, you have to stop whatever is attacking you. You have to stop it. So family's never easy and friends are never easy. But after finding out what happened, then certain people came back and it became a bit easier to discuss. It also made more sense of why, like, I was always falling asleep. Like, my best friend, who unfortunately got diagnosed with autoimmune hepatitis, she said to me, oh my God, now I know how you felt all those years. Like, we were in our 20s and I couldn't go out because I was exhausted. And she's like, oh my gosh, this is how you felt? I go, uh-huh, in my 20s. Yes. Until I started feeling better. Yeah. I couldn't just like run out because I was exhausted half the time, most of the time.
Yeah. Yeah. There's so many different dynamics, right? With the friends and the family, you're going through the diagnostic odyssey. Most people want to help. Some people will withdraw. Others, you know, kind of show up for you right at that exact moment when you're not quite sure. And I think what you just shared there covers the whole gamut. And I appreciate your vulnerability in sharing, Lisa. I can relate to, you know, being the oldest. I've got a, you know, younger brother, and in our family, you know, just generally speaking, we don't necessarily talk about all this stuff a whole lot, you know, whether it's with me or my broader family, my friends. And, you know, from a home perspective and a work perspective, I was always the one, like you said, that, you know, I'm going to try to be out there and help other people with the things that they've got going on. I want to take care of people. What do you need? How can I be of service to you? What can I do to help you take care of you? And, you know, so then when on this time where I'm at my lowest points, my weakest points, I'm like, well, now what do I do? Do I talk about this stuff? Do I share about these things? That's a lot. And, you know, and honestly, losing some of the relationships that I'd had before were some of the most difficult things. And what your opening statement there, when I asked about relationships, it sucks. I mean, I couldn't agree more. And I don't mean to laugh. Like, it's, I so relate to that as well. And, you know, I was thinking back that Megan Devine in her book, It's Okay That You're Not Okay, she said along the lines, like, no matter what, like the reasons are, right, the things that have happened, the loss of, you know, friends that you thought would be there and that would stick by you through thick and thin, it's added heartbreak, right? And she talks about those being these secondary losses that are just not fair. And it makes grief itself that we're going through that much more challenging, that much more difficult. And unless we kind of share about some of those things and talk about some of those things, maybe it doesn't get recognized, right? So I appreciate your bringing those points up. I get it.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So we'll start to wind down a little bit here, Lisa. I appreciate all the thoughts that you've shared here. I had just a couple last questions for you. I'm wondering, you know, at the beginning, you mentioned some of the different things and that you do to continue to work, and you do kind of get to, you know, work with your own schedule. It's different than it was before. I'm wondering how you go through and balance some of those things with work for, you know, or how you balance some of those things in terms of work and your life at home as a wife and a mom and your, you know, your conditions that you have. How do you balance all of that?
I mean, Molly's older, so that definitely helps that she can help in the house. And she's on, you know, she can, I mean, I a lot of the driving I have to do is not too far away, which is good. Husband, he likes to cook. I tend to be the cleaner, so I clean the best I can.
It's a good partnership. I like
that. Yeah, well, I try. I mean, work-wise, I mean, I just try to pace myself. I always tended to be really like, go, and then I had to realize after getting sick, I can't do that. So the adjuncting, one of the adjuncting is asynchronous. So it's every week the class, up, you know, there's a new week that opens up and the class goes by their pace for every week. So that I can do, you know, pretty much any time I can respond and grade. I'm teaching at Columbia where I have to do a weekly live session. So on those days, I try to maybe start work a little bit, my full-time job a little bit earlier. And as long as my bosses know, I'm very upfront about it. As long as my work is getting done, they don't expect me to be sitting here 8 hours a day, right? But if the work's not getting done, then I have to let them know, okay, listen, I'm having a bad week or whatever. But I've been, since I've been more verbal about it, it seems to have helped. So if I know that we have plans to like go out or see family or do something, I try to not overdo it at home if we're going to be going out.
It takes a lot of planning, a lot of foresight, like for, you know, thinking ahead, what, how do we manage all these things? And there's sometimes that that spurs for me a lot more of those questions. Like, what's happening here? Why am I doing, you know, I've got this activity coming up in 2 days and I've got to almost back plan for that amount of time just to be at a place where I can go and participate in that. And nobody really knows the amount of work or effort or mental, you know, capacity that goes into what we put in to be able to do some of those things when we're working through a rare disease life, a chronic illness life. And it is that in and of itself is a lot. And then you got everything else on there. So I appreciate you sharing some of your thoughts on that. You know, there's folks like me who have lost their career and find themselves in a completely different area. There's even some folks in my community who are like, man, I don't know how you have time to do a podcast or to write a blog or to jump on these calls or to advocate for your legislators. But everybody's different, right? Like, it's do what we can when we can. Well, let's finish up and put a bow on it here, Lisa. I'm curious if you have any other last words of wisdom or advice for any parents that might be in a similar situation. Anything that comes to mind?
Depending on your child, depending on how mature they are, what age they are, you know, they observe and they can understand more than we think they can. We have there is the internet. So if they are researching about, you know, your disease, maybe sit down with them and go through it to show or show them where to look. That's the biggest thing is communication, you know, with your child, if they can handle it. Some can't, you know, Molly couldn't back then, but as she got older, we were able to talk. I was able to sit down and talk to her. And now she's like, I'm going to get an autoimmune disease because you're everything you have, I have. I said, no, you don't have everything I have. That's okay. But thank you. Because that's how we are. We're very sarcastic. So our daughter's sarcastic. But I found to be helpful, you know, to be able, if the child can handle talking about it, that, you know, it's one of those helpful, I guess, tips that I found.
Yeah, I think that's great. That's great advice. And one theme that I've really picked up on you through these different areas that we've discussed today is communication. And I really appreciate that you really come back to that. You hone in on it and make sure that that's at the forefront, because we've got to be able to communicate. Nobody knows what it's like to kind of be in these shoes and to go through these things. And it helps everybody where we can all talk and get our points out there and have an open dialogue. Yeah. So Lisa, where can we find you?
Yeah. So my consulting, I guess, website is pearlywrites.com. And on Twitter, I'm Lisa Weinberger. But Pearly Writes has the two blogs that I wrote. I've been meaning to do an update, but I just haven't. You can find me. You can also type in my name. I think I pop up with a few other people named Lisa Weinberger. And I'm on LinkedIn as /Pearly Writes.
I like it. Well, we'll put those pieces together and make sure to get out there and follow you, connect with you on social and on your website. And like I said, you know, before, I'm thankful that you've kind of put yourself out there and you've jumped into the advocacy world and that you're sharing a lot of the things that you are. It's not easy to do that. You know, I'm very appreciative of you taking the time to share and, you know, talking and sharing some of your thoughts. Your willingness to do so is fantastic. It's really brave. It's really helpful to share your story. And I know that, you know, others will connect and benefit from what you've had to share here today, in addition to the other resources that you've made available to folks. So I just want to thank you, Lisa. Really appreciate it. All the best to you and your family. And I hope we can, you know, stay in touch and connect again soon.
Definitely. Thank you, Adam. I appreciate the time.
I hope you've enjoyed this episode of Parents is Rare, a series of the Energy in Action podcast. Please be sure to leave a review and a rating for this episode wherever you listen, and subscribe and listen to the Energy in Action podcast, where we talk all things Mito. Until next time, remember to show up, be vulnerable, supportive, and kind, and give yourself permission to feel along the way.